Greetings from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in the original form. You're tuned into The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and selfishness went wrong, and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of insight, aimed at making each of us more responsible, more cooperative, and more aware of those spiritual bonds that connect us to each other, no matter what we find to squabble about in the interim. Now, you can call us toll-free from the U.S. to 877-876-5227, or you can call us from Canada, if you happen to be there, to 888-810-8322. Or you can always call us direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and you may also be able to get it on the air in your local area. To find out if one of those old-fashioned on-the-air stations in your area carries the show, just contact us at bbsradio.com. The website for the show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at spiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All past shows become available as soon as it is humanly or extra-humanly possible on the station archives. Now, this week a lot's happened. If you're following presidential politics, especially on the web, you probably noticed that Ron Paul had gotten a lot more attention. As a matter of fact, Pat Buchanan, who is distinguished by once having employed Justin Raimondo as his speechwriter, endorsed Ron Paul as his candidate. A group pledged to get him the Republican nomination launched on the East Coast. A few months ago, I would have said that was impossible. Today, I'm wondering what the future holds. Jane Stillwater, our guest recently and the correspondent for The Iconoclast, that courageous paper in Texas, is probably headed back to Baghdad, this time to be embedded in the Red Zone. The last chapter of her book, now partially written, is just that, in the Red Zone. I know we'll all be looking for that in our local bookstores soon. And an update. In the continuing story of Mrs. Blankenship and the stolen votes from Dallas, Texas, Mrs. Blankenship is the lady whose votes were stolen right out from under her nose last October as she tried to vote for her chosen non-Republican candidates. And you can see my article on that in the Iconoclast last October. Mrs. Blankenship wrote, "Today, May 8th was the last day to vote early in the spring elections in Texas. It was hard for me to go to the polls this afternoon, vividly remembering how the Diebold DRE machine flipped my votes on October 23rd, 2006. I experienced both kinds of flipping reported only to happen on the DRE machine. One, vote flipping on the selection scenes, and two, vote flipping on the review screen. I took my voter registration card to the same election judge for Collin County. After being checked in, I asked for a paper ballot. Good for her. She had me go to a table on the other side of the room where she brought a fabric bag along with a sealed brown envelope containing a series of blank paper ballots for me to select my choice of blank ballot from. She had a hard time with the combination lock on the bag to open the slot into which I would shove my completed ballot after I had voted and placed it in the sealed envelope. She told me I must shove the envelope containing the ballot into the slot, and when the ballots were counted, the envelope would be retrieved by unlocking another combination at the bottom of the bag. I remarked that the bag seemed more awkward to open than the ballot box with a combination padlock. I was voting for Texas Constitutional Amendment and three places for the Plano Independent School District in Collin County. I bubbled in my choices with a pen beside the names of those I chose. Since I live in Dallas, I went to the Dallas County election judge, housed in the same room at the precinct 74, with the Collin County election officials to vote for my choice of a mayor and a city councilman. Dallas County does not use the Diebold DRE machine, but the judge had no paper ballots until election day. I was okay using the electronic machine for Dallas, as I had used it in the past without any problem. The judge was interested and helpful as she took me to a machine and walked me through the procedure to cast my two votes. It was hard for me to go to the polls after having my votes on October 23rd tampered with inside the DRE machine. But even with my feeling of being violated by the machine, I did my civic duty. I have voted in many elections, and I pushed myself to vote again today. Months after November 30th, 2006, I have a ruling by the Attorney General of Texas that Collin County will have to show me the votes I cast on the DRE machine. My concern is that when I go see my votes, they will not be easily located, although I know the approximate time I voted and the machine on which my votes were flipped. I frankly mistrust the system for voting electronically with good cause. I have exhausted my contacts to make sure my right to know that my vote was not stolen. I wrote a letter to the editor of the Dallas Morning News, Mr. Robert Mong Jr., in May 1st, 2007, explaining why going to vote on May 2007 would be less than an enthusiastic experience. You know, it's interesting what happened to Mrs. Blankenship, and it happened to so many people across the country. Voting used to be a really different experience for all of us, and I think we can hope that that, too, may change. And now our thought for the week ahead. Sunday is Mother's Day. As a mother myself, I love the occasion, but I much prefer to celebrate it at a Thai restaurant rather than one of those places where more mainline food is served, because those are nearly empty on Mother's Day. That way I feel more special. Just a hint, kids. The mother occasion actually began with Julia Ward Howe, the author of The Battle Hymn of the Republic. She encountered an idea for Mother's Day or Mother's Work Days from Anna Reeves Jarvis in 1858 in West Virginia. Mrs. Jarvis was a local teacher and church member and the mother of Anna Jarvis, who wanted to work for improved sanitation in her town. The Mother's Day we will celebrate on Sunday is the work of Anna Jarvis, her daughter. Julia Ward Howe applied the idea in 1872 and began to promote the idea of a Mother's Day for Peace, which seems curiously appropriate today, to be celebrated on June 2nd, honoring peace, motherhood, and womanhood. In 1873, women in 18 cities in America held a Mother's Day for Peace gathering. Boston celebrated the Mother's Day for Peace for at least 10 years. Arise, then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts, whether your baptism be of water or of tears. So begins the original Mother's Day proclamation in 1870. So, Sunday, celebrate Mother's Day with your mother while she's still around for you to enjoy. Listen to what I say about this. Now, today is May 11th. This is the point at which I think we should sort of have special effects, maybe some spooky music. Pretend with me for a moment. Dun, 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 dun. To normal people, this is just the day between the 10th and the 12th. But to those who study numerology, it has other significance. Normal people, you, me, and our guest tonight, for instance, do not look at the significance of numbers much unless those numbers are on small pieces of paper with a signature at the bottom, in which case they're very interesting. It is different for those associated with the neocons. They have a belief system that places them at the pinnacle of the human race, inheritors of all the power they can grab. They use such disciplines as numerology to justify those beliefs. That being the case, you can sometimes get what their intentions are by knowing what they think those numbers mean. 11 is what numerologists call a master number. It is associated with higher consciousness. To them, this is a big deal. Further, those who we vaguely know as Illuminati, those who are sure they know everything through their special insights gained by being, fill in the blank here, I'm sure their moms think they're special. Think of these as the grab-all-the-power types who study old books and sit around calculating and rearranging the game so they will win. Sort of makes you think of Karl Rove, doesn't it? They invest a lot of time and energy in a death cult that is part of their Illuminati system of wisdom that justifies why I am special worldview. While this looks strange to us from the outside, it evidently makes perfect sense to them from the inside. They believe that death is a powerful tool that releases energy and helps them accomplish their goals. Therefore, they are intent in ensuring that there's a lot of the stuff. A little death is good. A lot of death is better, releasing even more energy that makes them even more special. So while they're sitting around playing with themselves, and those numbers they come up with, ways they can demonstrate just how wonderful they are, Therefore, those special events taking place accordingly to those previously mentioned numbers evidently fit into their system in a way that we don't necessarily understand, but that is discernible. This is all very strange, yes, but they are strange people by any calculation. So there are people who have held their noses and studied the strange ideas held by the Illuminati as a means of understanding those notions that may occur to them. May 11th, today, is the last date when 11 occurs when something has not happened yet. Our guest tonight noticed the numbers, what is called number symbols, and started connecting the dots. He's going to tell you about that and about the other odd notions of those slightly flabby power grubbers we know as the neocons and about the thoughts that they have wandering around in their minds. They may well be crazy, but they also hold the reins of power. Scary thought. Therefore, we need to know. Captain Eric H. May is a specialist in intelligence who has been deep inside the cadre of power that we have come to know as those neocons. He's written professionally and also been considered for a job as a Bush speechwriter, but he escaped. Insiders see things that make them especially dangerous to the powers that be. Captain May's awareness of what has been going on with those now in the White House began in the mid-90s. That dangerous knowledge forced him to take evasive action to avoid being silenced. He and the people known as the Ghost Troop are working to make Americans aware of what has been happening so that action can be taken to change our direction. It's dangerous work, but Captain May is ready for what comes. Please welcome Captain Eric May.
Captain, well, it's quite a pleasure to be with you and the Spiritual Politician tonight. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm so glad that you could be with us again. This is just fantastic. And it's really amazing that we managed to do this on May 11th.
Well, you know, the Christian part of Ghost Troop would say that's the hand of God, and the agnostic part of Ghost Troop would say that's the Jungian synchronicity. And the Illuminatus, who are no part of Ghost Troop, would say that we're just playing their own numbers back at them to have fun.
Well, yes, they might say that.
Well, you know, one of the great ways to unnerve your opposition is to break its codes. And as you mentioned so well in your introductory remarks, my background was in intelligence, and I didn't start out my work in the anti-war movement as a code analyst. My field was military intelligence / languages. My specialty area was Russian intelligence. Yalagu Gavadit Baruski, if anybody knows Russian out there. But it was at Madrid. The Madrid bombings of 2004 was what turned Ghost Troop, which had previously been kind of a Iraq and Afghanistan analysis group, into a cryptanalytic or code-breaking group.
Mm-hmm.
And Madrid, as some of your listeners may recall, was, okay, of course we have New York, September 11th, 9-1-1-2001, Madrid occurred on 3-11-2004.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that interested us mildly. We figured it was another false flag terror attack. The Spanish at the time were holding national elections, and the hope of the people who perpetrated the attack was that a, quote, Al-Qaeda, unquote, attack on Madrid would turn the Spanish population towards the Nationalist Party and strengthen Spain's involvement in the war.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't work, but the numbers were interesting. 9/11 was New York. 3/11 was Madrid. 3, of course, is the square root of 9. Now, that's
mm-hmm.
a mild numerological or numeric coincidence. But there are other what we call numeric harmonies going on. If you count the intervening days between 9/11/2001 and 3/11/2004, the number of days between, excluding both 9/11 and 3/11,
mm-hmm.
coincidentally, you come up with exactly 911 days.
Wow.
Now, that's a very interesting coincidence. It was only when we got those two coincidences, that 3/11 was really 3 squared 11 equals 9/11, so it was another way of saying 9/11, and that there were 911 days exactly between 9/11 New York and 3/11 Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
That was the point at which we started doing numeric analysis, cryptanalysis, what have you, and started breaking into the Illuminatus code. Now, there's
mm-hmm.
nothing that's so ridiculous to the normal person as the notion that they're using this kind of mumbo-jumbo numerology, and I always start any comments I have on this matter with the caveat that I don't believe in it, but I believe they believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before I spoke Russian, it sounded like gibberish to me, but I studied Russian, and it no longer sounds like gibberish to me, although it would to most of your listeners.
Right, of course.
I'm sure that what we're going to talk about, you know, tonight will sound like a first course in Russian to many people, but it's real nevertheless. It's a language, a numeric language that they use, which gives them two great abilities. They have the ability to have timelines that are unknown to the public. You know how, if you're Catholic, the Catholic Church has a liturgical calendar.
Right.
Which, you know, the average person thinks 12 months, 52 weeks, 365 days. But the Catholic Church still works according to the liturgical calendar, which has all kinds of days that are significant if you're a daily Catholic. Mm-hmm. Well, the Illuminatus have their own hidden calendar, too. In the Catholic Church's case, it isn't hidden. It's just not widely known. But in the case of the Illuminatus, it is actually hidden. But there are all kinds of cult significances within the year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they can set up plans, giving themselves a timeline, guidance for when things have to be accomplished, and how they can coordinate between themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the open media. In fact, it's in the open media that they most often embed their code. Which, of course, is what the media told us at the beginning of this war phase in American history, because they said they were going to be embedded.
Well, that's true. Why do they do it like that, do you know?
A couple of reasons. The first is that it gives you a national means of communication. You know how if you and your husband are at a party somewhere, you can talk between yourselves using certain code words?
Yes.
So you can talk on the fly, but to everyone else it sounds like you're just talking to the group.
Right.
Mommies and daddies do that around kids, since we're coming up on Mother's Day, all the time. You know, Dad stretches out his arm and says, "Oh, it's Saturday night. I think it's time for bed, Mama." Now, to the kids, that means it's time to go nappy, and to the parents, that means it's time to go back and play.
Mm-hmm.
It's a double entendre, a conversation occurring on multiple levels. We do that all the time in our own conversations. We all use the practice. Well, if you're a national cabal, and certainly the neocon war movement is a national cabal, an international cabal, really, then you use the broadest communication medium that you control. And in this case, we would be talking about what's commonly referred to as the corporate media. But what we in Ghost Truth understand as what they said. They told us that they were going to be embedded media. And embedding is precisely the word used to describe coding. You embed code.
The one that the show tonight, I called an old friend of mine who actually has studied numerology, and he did say that they actually think that, you know, planning these things, for instance, you know, making sure that people die at a certain time, actually is something that, according to Illuminati thought, gives them power.
Right.
It's like a sacrifice, which I thought was really bizarre.
Well, no, you were right on target with that. It's their kind of death cult, you know, capacity to inflict havoc with control. In fact, what's the phrase? Ab chaos ordo is, I think, the Illuminatus motto, which means from chaos order. You have to think that Illuminatus, which I guess the most common word for those would be Freemasons or Masons, they actually think of themselves like, let's say, the Masons who built medieval temples, medieval churches. These temples, these churches, you know, the great cathedrals, sometimes would take 100 years to complete. The lives of several generations would be used in building something that the first generation started would never see the fruition of. But they worked according to, you know, lore and measure. So what they think of things as is a kind of, to use a big word, an architectonic process. They're always building a temple. The number codes are simply the specifications of that temple. But
well,
this is all true. Let me give you a couple more examples that will make it a lot more apparent to the public, shall
I? Great.
Okay. Back in 1990, one of two things happened. Either Saddam Hussein went insane and blew his whole national policy by a blatant act of aggression on Kuwait, which is what we said and what the media amplified, or, as Saddam Hussein said, Bush gave him the green light to take Kuwait for services rendered when the Iraqis fought Iran and we were backing them. Okay, so Bush has Saddam Hussein in the trap, and we're going to be getting into the Middle East. This is September 11th, 1990, when Bush goes before Congress and says this is the beginning of a new world order.
Was that September 11th?
Yes.
Oh,
now,
wow.
So September 11th, 1990, George Bush Sr., you know, George H.W. Bush, says the beginning of a new world order. 11 years later to the day.
11 years later.
On September 11th, 2001, we had the New York attacks.
Oh, interesting.
Now, let's take another, I'll throw you another coincidence to show you how you have to look at the numbers. September 11th, 1990, or 9-11, excuse me, yeah, 9-11-1990,
mm-hmm.
Anyone at home who has a piece of paper, by all means, start doodling these numbers. It'll be very nice notes for the interview, and it'll show you how they think. Take 911-1990, that's the date code of September 11th, 1990. You always knock out zeros because zeros don't exist to them.
Okay.
You get 911, and then almost as a reversal, you get 199. The 9 becomes a 1, the 1s become 9. 911-199. Interesting, right? Now, take the date of the 9/11 attacks.
And what's the significance to them of that, then, the reversal?
It's a mirroring. They love to do that kind of stuff. It's a way of encoding a number. 9-1-1 reverses, if you look at it, if you reverse the numbers, 9s are one digit away from 10. Nines become 1s and 1s become 9s, so 9-1-1 equals 199 if you kind of reverse and distort it. I'll give you another example. September 11th, 2001, the 9-11 attack, that's actually 9-1-1-0-1 or 9-1-1-1.
Because you don't pay any attention to
No, of course not. It's never emphasized. Now, let's take Madrid. Watch how they do it at another level. Madrid was 3-11. And again, there were 911 days between 9-11-2001 and 3-11-2004. The international media, of course, is part of the neocon cabal, the war party. The international media published immediately that al-Qaeda had done the Madrid attacks, and the number of people dead was 199. So, again, you get a 911 variant, 199. That was the body count they put out in the international media.
Was it true?
No. I mean, maybe, but probably not. You can always play with body counts. Remember how your friend you said earlier said that they kind of get their feeling of mojo, of potency, from making the numbers work?
Yes.
They fix the books. Everything we read in the media is a construction, and none of it is necessarily true.
Well, that's certainly true.
After the first body count from Madrid, which was 199, they actually revised it to 191 after a week. Now, that's curious for two reasons. First, 191 is what's called an anagram or a mixing up of 911. It's also a reversion down, a revision downwards of body counts. Body counts never get revised down.
Yeah, they don't because they generally find more people.
Right. More people don't come back to life.
That's
so the
true.
Code actually took precedence over journalistic reality. You don't revise a death count down from 199 a week later to 191, unless you're trying to send a message between the lines. Let's take another. London, another 7 motif. London was on 7-7, July 7th, 2005. 7-7, of course, is 7 times 11.
Oh, yeah.
London was 7-7, 2005. If you add up 2005, you get another 7, 2 plus 5.
Mm-hmm.
Body count given, 52. 5 plus 2, another 7.
Mm-hmm.
So the London code could be called 77 and then 2005/52 dead. So 2552. I mean, they love this stuff. Want another? We just talked about 77 London, 2005. There was actually a 7-11 attack, which we were predicting a 7-11 would be a bad day. People right now who you know, scoff at the idea that 5-11 is a day to look out for the possibility that they're planning something, don't remember that the last major al-Qaeda, so-called al-Qaeda attack, was on 7-11 in Mumbai, India. 7-11?
Yes.
That was Mumbai. And by the way, a verbal play there, Mumbai used to be called Bombay. So it was the 7-11 Bombay bombing. What was the numerological trick on that one? Well, the 7-11, of course, but they also were careful to point out in the Western media that there were how many bombs? 7. And how quickly did they go off? Within 7 minutes. And in India, that was changed. They said 7 bombs in 11 minutes.
Why the difference?
Oh, I don't know why the Indian people were spinning it different, but both numbers, 77 or 711, both have cult significance. 77 being 7 times 11, and 711 just being, you know. So you see the cult aspect. I don't know why the Indians put a different number out, but the interesting thing is they didn't say 710 or, you know, 7 bombs in 10 minutes or 6 bombs in 4 minutes. It was 7 and 7 or 7 and 11, according to who you listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take another supposed Al-Qaeda attack, Amman, Jordan. Now, anybody who knows the Middle East, just take a look at Israel, look at Jordan, realize that Israel shares a lot of space with Jordan, and that having Jordan on its side helps it to flank Syria. These are geopolitical considerations that any trained person or historian who's not militarily trained should pick up.
Yeah.
The Amman-Jordan bombings benefited no one so much as Israel because, first off, they killed two top leaders of Palestinian intelligence who just happened to be in Amman for that wedding party. The consequence of the bombing was that Al-Qaeda got blamed, the Jordanian government was buffaloed into resigning, and the king appointed the former ambassador to Israel as prime minister. So the result of the Amman-Jordan bombings was that Jordan turned to a neocon outpost. You know what day the Amman-Jordan bombings occurred to?
What?
Well, if you take 9/11 and turn it backwards, what do you get? 11/9?
Oh, my heavens.
It was 11/9/2005.
Now, what is it they say about coincidences? If there are too many of them, it isn't a coincidence.
Right, right. And, of course, all this that we're doing by the mainstream media, by the controlled corporate media, use what phrase you will, the neocon media, these are all called conspiracy theories.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And what that means is anything they don't want to talk about.
That's
so
true.
Right now, the kind of trash that they're putting out on the air about the Iraq war being a failure, for instance, was stuff that we in Ghost Group and I and my writings in the Houston Chronicle were predicting and writing about as much as a decade ago and writing emphatically about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, it was called lunacy and conspiracy theory. The idea that the United States had been railroaded into an illegal, immoral war that we were ultimately going to lose. 4 years ago, that was called conspiracy theory and lunacy on the mainstream media. Now, 4 years later, turn on MSNBC tonight, and that's what you hear them talking about.
Mm-hmm.
How we were railroaded into an illegal, immoral war, and it's falling apart. More
well,
or less.
Yes, and now we look at it, and it's an illegal and immoral war that's falling apart.
So, exactly. So, what is labeled as the media's job is to manufacture consent and to disseminate disinformation
mm-hmm.
in the most critical areas. I'm not saying don't listen to your TV reporter about whether or not your kid's school is going to be dismissed tomorrow, you know, or whether or not Mother's Day is going to come on, you know, May 13th or May 12th. I mean, they're good for basic things like that, but that's just the sugar to get you to swallow the poison. The poison is things like Iraq has WMDs and we have to invade it, Al-Qaeda is hiding out in Baghdad, or the variant now, which is that Al-Qaeda is hiding out in Al-Anbar province. You know, these big lies are cast upon us without criticism or reflection by the media.
Mm-hmm.
And these codes, like what we're talking about, are carried in the media. Now, let's talk about today for a moment, shall we?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is it's at May 11th.
Okay. I'll give you the interesting things we look at. The important thing to realize is that we, while on occasion Ghost Troop gets such strong signals from the media that an attack is coming, that we will issue a prediction and a red alert.
Uh-huh.
In this case, we simply issued an alert, because we wanted the public to be aware to the fact that the only 11 series, take odd number months, the only odd number month lacking a 11th day attack is May, 5/11. Let's work backwards and I'll show you how our numbers work. 9/11 is New York. 7/11 is Mumbai.
Yes.
3/11 on the other side of 5 is Madrid. Yeah,
uh-huh.
You want the 1/11?
Yes.
The 1/11 is very subtle. The whole power structure of the United States works according to these Freemasonic Illuminatus notions. So if you go back to the day, Congress really violated the Constitution by giving Bush power to wage war without Congress's approval. That was 1 year and 1 month after 9/11. That was October 11, 2002. Take out the zero. October's number code is 10/11, October 11, and then 2002. Numerologically, take out the zeros, and what you get is 111. 111 was the day that Congress really made all this possible by giving Bush dictatorial powers over our war policy. And it's a further code because it's 111/22 for 2002. Now, the next day after that would have been 10/12/2002, which decodes to 11/222. You know what coincidentally happened that day?
No, what?
The Bali bombings, which brought Australia into the war party. In other words, they ain't even subtle once you start decoding, once you start breaking the code. Okay, let's look at today, 5/11. It's been interesting in a few respects. They like to kind of leave their mark. And fortunately for our interview, they did so in a very blatant way. The original 9/11 attack occurred on 9/11/01. Reverse that, and you get 11109.
Yeah.
You take and reverse the numeric values.
Yeah.
Okay, 111.09 was how much the stock index grew today.
Oh.
If the Dow Jones Industrial Average gains for the day happened to be 111.09.
Are they sort of obsessed about making the numbers come out like that?
Of course. Yeah, I mean, only when it's important. Look, I mean, next Tuesday or Thursday it may be, 86.24 that the Dow goes up and down. But we have noticed in days when it looked like things were getting ready, when they were trying to set up what's called false flag terror attack, meaning simulated terror attacks that you do yourself. We've noticed that things like the Dow, NASDAQ, the Dow and NASDAQ averages will show numerological things. We've seen a 6.66 or a 666. Today, as I say, we see a 11109. Now, think about it. The attack happened on 9/11/01, and today we get a 11109. It's the same number played backwards. That's their way of kind of sending a marker. They're showing power. So that even if they don't do an attack today, which God hopes, God knows, I hope they don't, and nor do I fully expect them to. I'm simply aware of the possibility. Even if they didn't do it, they still sent out their little sign to their club, their Illuminatus buddies, we're in control. Look, we can control something as mighty as the Dow Jones average.
Well, that actually could be in and of itself a terrorist attack, given the significance of the stock exchange to us.
It's the stock exchange. Well, we have to think of how finance, international finance, and the stock market have been linked to all the attacks. There's always a massive fluctuation in the market after one of these attacks. So clearly, international finance have collaborated with the neocons in the biggest possible way, which is why, for instance, after 9/11, we had the massive put options for airlines,
right,
which made people tens of millions of dollars, and the SEC refuses to investigate openly.
Well, there's been so much that's happened that way. I mean, wealth transfers that have taken place with the short selling, too, and they've been virtually ignored.
Right. Well, all of these things. Let's take another numbers game with 9/11 itself. You have the two World Trade Centers. Look at them in your mind, and what number do they represent?
11.
How many stories in each? 110, which decodes to 11, scratch the zero, 11. This isn't accidental. The first flight that hit the first tower that started the 9/11 attacks, take a wild guess what the number was, flight number.
Was it 11?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my heavens.
The one that hit the Pentagon, 77.
Oh.
All four of them put together. First, flight 11 hits the World Trade Center. Next, flight 175 hits the World Trade Center. Next, flight 77 hits the Pentagon. Next, flight 93 craters in the Midwest, right?
Yes.
So out of all those numbers I just gave, 11, I hope somebody's writing these down at home, 11, 175, 77, and 93, I think that's like 10 digits, make it 9. Do you notice anything peculiar about the series I just gave, about every number in it? Every number in it is odd.
Yeah, it is.
You know what the odds against nine consecutive numbers coming up odd is?
No, what is it?
About 1 in 500. Take a coin and see how long it takes you to get nine heads or nine tails in a row.
Huh.
It's a 50-50 proposition each time, right? So how do you get nine numbers that are all odd? It's easy. It's cult significance. And those numbers cover all the major numbers from 1 through 11, which is the system they work on.
Well, the friend of mine that I called up to discuss this with, because I really was very curious and I honestly don't know anything about it, said, oh, yeah, this has been, you know, there have been books written about that. People have known it for centuries that this is exactly what they're doing. But it's funny the way it happens all out in the open, and when you take a look at the numbers, it does seem compelling.
If anybody, it doesn't take so much cleverness as courage to bring the point up. If anybody in the mainstream media would start doing a story on this, it'd be Katie Barr at the door. The public could figure this out in no time flat. In fact, to get the public aware of it, I actually did a piece back on the fifth anniversary of 9/11, which is kind of a fifth year 9/11. We thought that might be a hidden 5/11.
Mm-hmm.
On the fifth anniversary of 9/11, I actually wrote something called Army Cracks Al-Qaeda Code.
Mm-hmm.
Because this code, which we call the embedded code, oftentimes in Ghost Group, and which you would understand and your listeners are hearing as Illuminatus coding, is really exactly what they call the Al-Qaeda code. If the government right now came out with a project for the smartest high school student to figure this code out, there'd be 10 kids in every high school in America doing better work than I've been able to do. It's not extremely difficult. It just takes looking for the code.
Mm-hmm.
But the job of the media is to convince you it's not there. After the 7/11 attacks in Mumbai, the Bombay attacks, you actually started getting a UPI story here, a CBS story there, about how Al-Qaeda apparently loves to do attacks on the 11th day of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And FBI and NSA are looking into this, and of course it went nowhere. You know, but the coincidence was so conspicuous. Tell you another thing about the Mumbai attacks, 7/11?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, takes a little geography again. Mumbai occurred in India. India is the furthest, it's the country that contains the Middle East. To the west of India is Pakistan and Afghanistan. So India blocks off the Muslim Middle East, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The attacks in Mumbai were imputed to Al-Qaeda, sponsored by elements in Pakistan, which meant that India had what's called a casus belli, a reason for going to war against Pakistan if they wanted. So in a manner of speaking, the 7/11 attacks in India made sure that Pakistan, which has a nuclear arsenal and is a Muslim country, was already kind of threatened by the 7/11 bombing. You see, India had the excuse to say, Pakistan did it, we're going to hit them.
So they were hoping that would happen?
No. It was a geostrategic move because the next day is the day that Israel invaded Lebanon.
Ah.
You see, you can pay $5,000 for a 70-inch wide screen and watch TV 24/7, and you will never hear anybody make that basic connection that the 7/11 occurrence just happened to do exactly what Israel's war plan would have wanted the day before Israel attacked Lebanon. It strengthened, it put the eastern part of the Middle East under threat from an Indian attack, in case the U.S. and Israel pushed India to do it, in case Pakistan intervened in the Lebanon situation.
Has anybody ever used a computer to calculate these things?
Oh, I hope somebody out there will. Things to look for are day codes, days between days. Give you another one. 9/11, the day before 9/11 happened, if you'd broken your leg, what number would you have called?
911.
If someone had been breaking in the door?
911.
Right. Anytime you needed strong, muscular government intervention to save your hide, you would have called 911.
That's
the people who did that, the Illuminatus guys who did it, knew that when they made the 911 number, they were creating a reflex using their cult numbers. And they called in the chips on 911-2001, because immediately we talk about 9/11. Well, in Britain, the emergency code is 999.
Oh.
Which, by the way, is a 666 turned upside down. That's another numerologist trick. But 999 is their emergency code. Okay. I said that between New York 9/11 and Madrid 3/11, there were 911 days, our emergency code.
Uh-huh.
Between Bali, Australia, October 12, 2002, and London, England, 2005, between those two supposed Al-Qaeda attacks, there are 999 days, the British emergency code.
Interesting.
It's too good. Look, it's too good. You couldn't make it up. You couldn't. I mean, you could make it up. That's what they do. It's a code.
It's interesting that they would use a code right out in front of, you know, God and everybody like that.
Well, that's power. I mean, and I think we get a little bit too refined and we say, oh, Illuminatus, Rovian intellect, Nietzschean indifference to human suffering. We use these kind of Olympian terms as if these guys were anything but psychopaths.
Well,
and the fact of the matter is, any group of thugs, when they get ready to picture somebody, a group of thugs, teens, surrounding a guy in a wheelchair in a dark corner in a U.S. inner city, if you wish, and what you'll probably find is they egg each on by other on by making remarks, code remarks, you know, and the fact that the person who's about to get attacked hears it and dreads it is part of the fun, and it's part of what gives cohesion to the gang. Don't think of the neocons or beyond them the Illuminatus as a supremely wise, you know, world conspiracy. You know, don't think of them only in those terms. Think of them as like a street gang.
Well, I actually think of them as badly behaved kindergartners.
Same thing.
Yes.
Same thing. I mean, what does a bully on the playground do before he beats another kid up? He talks trash about him and, you know, lets him know what's coming.
Uh-huh.
So that's their way of saying to their people, we are going to do it. We are doing it. We did it. They give markers before, during, and after.
Have you ever had any insights into what the inner world of the neocons looks like that way? I mean, it sounds like they're communicating between different groups of them.
Well, I think that the neocon patchwork is made up of, well, there are two basic groups. The neocons are made up of... it's an Anglo-Judeo alliance. Many of my Jewish friends complain that the word neocon has become synonymous for Jewish,
mm-hmm.
which isn't the case, but it is the case that a lot of Jewish media and finance people are behind the neocon movement, and in fact they dominate the media end of it. The other side of the neocon alliance is what we would call WASP. You know, since we're talking ethnicity, the WASP are the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, what was called the power elite by C. Wright Mills.
Right.
Or, I suppose, the modification of that, Dwight D. Eisenhower called it the military-industrial complex.
Right.
So, I mean, anywhere else in the world, there's no secret in saying, you know, there's an Anglo-Judeo alliance of the UK, the U.S., and Israel, the hidden partner, aiming at controlling the Middle East to take care of world domination via oil control, and to put out the fires in Israel's Middle East situation.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else in the world understands that. But here in the United States, the minute you say any of that, it's another word that goes along with conspiracy theorists, is anti-Semite.
Well, people do say that.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, which brought up, I strongly recommend that people who are intimidated or cowed by that word pay attention to the situation of Professor Finkelstein, a Jewish fellow himself, who's right now applying for tenure, I think, at Loyola. It's become a big case and much opposed by the neocons. But Finkelstein himself is Jewish, and he makes these exact points that I'm making.
Huh.
So well, it's the two objectives of the Middle East were oil and Israel. It always was.
And why in the world? I mean, this is something that's always made me curious. I know that Napoleon actually sort of promoted that too, but why in the world? Why would they want to go back to really a pretty sad piece of real estate?
Well, remember the two things. When you talk about Napoleon, you're talking about, for instance, the Napoleonic Wars being largely financed by the House of Rothschild.
Well, yes.
Okay. Once again, these have become taboo topics. And look, I don't talk about them because I got anything against the Jews any more than I have anything against the Mexicans or the Irish. But, you know, I'm going to call a spade, and I'm not going to hide from ethnicity when it's so clearly ethnically motivated in part. The reason the Middle East is such a desirable ground is first because it's not a poor neighborhood. It's the richest turf on earth. You just got to dig for oil. That's
the
first thing.
Okay, let's imagine for a moment the oil's not worth anything. What does that do to their paradigm?
Well, that would take away, there are two legs of this paradigm. Oil, meaning the money that can be made from taking over the world's preeminent geostrategic resource. If you control oil, you control the world. Everyone needs it. China can't grow without it. India can't feed its population without it. You know, Western Europe submits to whoever controls it. So oil is the first and foremost goal for everybody. The second part is the geopolitical necessities of Israel. No one in America knows that Israel right now is a worldwide pariah for its treatment of the Palestinians. I mean, Jimmy Carter wrote a book about it, calling it a kind of apartheid, and now he's been attacked as an anti-Semite, for God's sake.
Well, yes.
So
if you take
away the oil, all you have left is Israeli geopolitical aims, and that would mean that when you take, remember, oil and Israel are the two goals, and the ethnic factions are the Anglo-Judeo axis.
Do you think, then, that they've used this whole rapture thing just to get the cooperation from groups in America
willing
to go to war?
That segues rather nicely into the theocon part of your discussion tonight.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, precisely. Look, it's not coincidental that this war occurred the year after the millennium. Again, a point that never gets brought out on TV, but any college in a sophomore history class learns that Christians go gaga on thousand-year numbers.
Well, they do, and it's interesting if you take a look at how they do it. I mean, I can't believe the number of times they've sold everything and climbed to the top of the hill and waited and then eventually came back hungry.
Sure, but you could have anticipated it in the year 2000, which is why when you have Christianity kind of, I think there has been a deliberate attempt by elements like the Illuminatus to sway what we call evangelical Christianity into becoming really a fascist church, a state nationalist church.
Well, they sort of did it themselves through the Scofield Bible and everything. I mean, if you take a look at it, the whole thing is just painful because it's so silly and stupid.
Well, yeah, I mean, here's the deal. You can tweak and guide religious fervor. The people who oftentimes are, for instance, literalist interpreters of the Bible, look, if my pickup truck were broken down on a lonely road, these are the kind of people more than likely I would like to have stop and give me a hand.
Yes.
You know, they're good, simple, God's folk. There's nothing wrong with them except that they're easily duped. They're credulous. They call it faith, but it's really credulous.
Baker and all of that. I mean, it was amazing what they put up with.
Well, remember, they've been guided by this whole movement of fundamentalist Christianity is heavily infiltrated by the neocons.
Mm-hmm.
So that you have, for instance, Tom DeLay, Bush's thug in the House who got kicked out of, kind of run out of Congress a year ago.
Yes.
Tom DeLay is now working as point man for the Conservative Christian Coalition.
Well, it's the best job he could get.
Well, it's a great job no matter how you describe it because it's so important. Remember, that one quarter of the population, which is fundamentalist, really represents the cornerstone of what we call the Bush League. The whole neocon cabal is rooted, really, you could almost say the neocon cabal is rooted in two kinds of Zionism. First is the traditional Jewish Zionism, which, the Jews themselves write a lot about. Karl Marx describes it extensively. And the more interesting, virulent variety in some ways, which is Christian Zionism. Have you heard this phrase?
I have heard. I know what Christian Zionism is. It's this kind of nuttiness that they go through. But they want to bring the rapture on.
Right. Israel is right no matter what because as long as Israel is there, we're going to have Armageddon, and that's good.
Yeah,
you'll remember, that to get back within the experience of your listeners and our own experience, I talk about the 7/11 attacks this year in Bombay, in Mumbai, and then 7/12, Israel goes to war against Lebanon. Now, of course, in the U.S. media, which is controlled by the Jewish lobby, that's simple fact. I don't mean to hurt anyone's feelings, but I've written for major newspapers and I was an NBC editorialist. I know what I'm talking about. Anybody who doesn't hasn't figured out the game. But the day after Bombay bombings, Israel launches its war plan. The U.S. media calls it a hostage rescue, for heaven's sake. I mean, you hostage rescue by bombing Beirut? And then you notice at the same time they start doing, CNN starts putting up the rapture index, which means the percentage of Americans who think that this is the beginning of Armageddon.
I know. It's like they think that they can just talk everybody into it. It's like
they can. Go back to Lincoln saying, well, who has this said? You can fool some of the people, all the people some of the time, and some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time.
No, that was Barnum and Bailey.
Well, that sounds better. Well, the people who can be fooled all the time are the ones who are invested in a faith paradigm that's already delusional.
Mm-hmm.
The evangelical, or if you wish to say, the theocons, are really the willing dupes of the neocons.
Well, yeah,
the neocons believe in Nietzsche. The theocons believe in, Nietzschean-dominated biblical theology intended to turn them into a killing machine, which is what they become.
Well, yes, they have. You take a look at the U.S. military today, it's dominated by theocons.
Yeah, it's pushed very strongly. It's called Christianity. Look, this is nothing new. You know, yesterday Vladimir Putin came out with a very interesting remark on their World War II Victory Celebration Day. Germany surrendered, I think, on May 10th, 1945. So they had their celebration, and Putin came out and said basically that the United States is acting like the new Nazi regime.
Well, yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, we say yeah, but of course all the media is like, How can this insane man say such a thing?
True.
And of course, everyone's snickering on the side because it's exactly an accurate remark.
Well, yeah,
but
I mean,
if you look back at the Nazis, the German army, the Wehrmacht on its belt buckle had Gott mit uns, God is with us, and the whole National Socialist movement was largely fueled by conservative Christians.
Mm-hmm, it was.
Christians
should give us pause for thought.
It's not hard to look. Anybody can become a rabid dog.
Yeah,
everything
true.
We impute to the Muslim madman, right? You know, can be equally said and probably would be better said about what we have become, which is the Christian madmen.
Yes, but I don't know how actually Christian they are. I mean, it's one thing to use a name, it's another thing to actually be the thing.
Well, yeah, I agree. We come into an issue of what Christianity means, but I'm talking about the political, not the divine phenomenon of the Christian religion. The Christian ecclesiastic structure has been turned into a cheerleading section for Middle Eastern war.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is something that I think that a lot of people are going to have to go really think about a little bit, because it's jeered. It's made fun of to such an extent that people simply refuse to look at it.
Yeah.
But you've really given us some insight today into what really may be going on there. And what I'm going to hope is that somebody generates a computer program that gives us all of the odds and all of the numbers.
Oh, yes. Please, by all means, publish the statistics against this being coincidental.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Melinda, it's been a great pleasure. Always nice to talk to a spiritual politician. And I wish all of your listeners the best. And let's hope we get through the rest of the 5/11 day with no unhappy events.
Yes, amen.
Amen to that.
You take care.
Well, as I always say, this is Ghost Troop Captain May, signing out from Houston, Texas, belly of the bush beast.
Amen. Good night.
Good night.
And that's our show for today, Friday, May 11, 2007. Here at The Spiritual Politician, we're working to help individuals find ideas to make all human organizing tools like government non-impactive to us as a people and to the world, which means understanding the crazies who are in control now. Freedom and doing the right thing matters in all part of our lives, and understanding is sort of a precondition for that, isn't it? On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. This remains where we want to go today. It's up to each of us to ensure we reach the destination. As Jefferson said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter it or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Thank you, Jefferson. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster, coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom. May God be with you every step of the way. Good night.